Hi, how you doing? There are a couple of phrases that are used and have become commonplace in so many societies. And in fact, they've become so commonplace in societies that they've almost become cliche or overlooked. So just full participation this morning. How many people have ever heard the phrase Good Samaritan? The phrase Good Samaritan is used to refer to someone who does an act of kindness for someone, usually someone they don't know or something like that. So the other phrase, again, full participation. How many of you have heard the phrase love your neighbor? So what most people don't realize in the cultures, almost every culture has some version of Good Samaritan and love your neighbor. And what most of the cultures don't realize, and sometimes even people like us who have heard it so often for so many years don't realize, is that both of those are phrases that Jesus used, and he put them, connected them together. When Jesus used those two phrases, they were connected together. And so if every culture has some version of the phrases, and if Jesus used them and connected them together, and if the cultures and people like us tend to take them for granted or overlook them, or they become cliche, when Jesus used them, what did he mean, and why did he use them the way that he used them? Well, I'm so glad you asked. So let's dig in and see what we can discover about when Jesus used these two phrases and how important they are in a world that has been broken by sin and in the lives of people who choose to follow Jesus. Jesus was teaching a large crowd that had gathered. And in teaching that crowd, he used the phrase, love your neighbor. And after he used the phrase, love your neighbor, an expert in the Jewish religious law challenged Jesus' use of it. Now, the expert in the religious law was trying to trap Jesus, trying to trick Jesus into answering a way that they could disagree with, and that they could kind of blame Jesus for misteaching the things of God. And so Jesus, I don't know, he had this amazing knack for knowing what people were doing, and he had this amazing knack for knowing what people's motives were, and knowing what the expert in the Jewish religious law was up to, Jesus turned the tables with a couple of questions of his own for the expert in the religious law after he challenged Jesus' use of the term love your neighbor. So here's the two questions that Jesus asked. What does the law of Moses say? How do you read it? Now, when Jesus says, what does the law of Moses say? He's referring to the Jewish law that was given to the nation of Israel when Moses was their leader. The Jewish people predicated relationship with God and all of life on the Jewish law. But Jesus also knew that there were different factions of the Jewish religious leadership and belief system that disagreed over what certain things meant and how they were supposed to be applied and implemented. Now, I know that's incredibly shocking, that there were religious people that disagreed over things and created factions and divisions and sections and all that. He knew that there were religious leaders who thought this about the meaning of the law and religious leaders that thought this about the law. And so Jesus wants to know from this guy, how do you read it? In other words, which group do you fit in? Do you come from a red state, or do you come from a blue state? Come on, you can laugh at that. Tell me what your perspective is so I know how to contextualize my answer to you to clarify what it really means to love your neighbor. Because this is what the issue is over. Love your neighbor. So how do you read the law? And based on what you answer me, I will then know how to explain what God really means. Okay? So Jesus asks the expert in the religious law, and interestingly enough, the expert in the Jewish religious law provides the exact same answer that Jesus gave that he challenged. And here's how he answers the question. He says, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. This is part of the Jewish law that became known in the Jewish culture as the Shema. And the Shema was part of the morning and daily prayers of the, or morning and evening daily prayers of the Jewish people. The Jewish people would pray this phrase every morning and every evening. And Jesus told them when they asked what the greatest commandment was, love God, love others. Love God, love your neighbor. And the Jewish religious leader, the expert in the Jewish religious law, answers the question the same way. Love God, love your neighbor. It's almost like this is core. This is central to the Jewish belief system. Okay? So, Jesus, again, has a knack for knowing what people are doing and thinking. And so he tells the guy, he affirms the guy's answer. He goes, right, do this and you will live. He says, yeah, you're exactly right. Love God, love others. It's almost like Jesus is saying, if we could get love God and love your neighbor right, everything else in life will take care of itself. If you just do love God, love your neighbor, all the other stuff in life will work itself out, because everybody will be so focused on loving God and loving their neighbors that all the other stuff will be in the context of that. And if all the context of all the other stuff is in love God and love your neighbors, then the world becomes a much better place. So, the expert in the Jewish religious leader, or the expert in the Jewish law, turns to Jesus, and it says the man wanted to justify his actions, which means he must not have gotten love God, love your neighbor right as often as he thought he should. He wanted to justify his actions. He wanted to justify the way he was choosing to live, regardless of what Jesus said about what God meant. And again, I know that's shocking that people would do that, but that's what this guy wants to do. An expert in the Jewish religious law comes to Jesus, challenges his answer, and then wants to justify his actions, which apparently don't align with the very law that he just quoted, and said, and who is my neighbor? Now, we understand the question, right? I mean, think about some of the neighbors that we have. And we look at this context of love your neighbor, when for most of us, we look around at the neighbors we have, and we think, judge your neighbor. Blame your neighbor. Try to forget your neighbor. Call the cops on your neighbor. And so we understand the question. You see, we often want to justify our actions or our attitudes by defining our neighbor as those people who treat me the way I want to be treated, or the people that are like me, or the people that I like. If I don't like them, if they don't treat me the way they want or that I want to be treated, and if they're nothing like me, then I don't want to put them in the category of my neighbor, because I don't want to love them. And I want to justify my action of not loving them by saying they're not really my neighbor. Well, Jesus does what he does in so many of these situations. He pulls people out of their comfort zone, and he expands the understanding of who God is and what life with God is about and what it means to live a life aligned with God by telling a story that reveals our neighbor or our neighbors are more than just the people who live next to us or live around the corner from us. And Jesus expands the understanding of who our neighbors are beyond the people who treat us the way we want to be treated, beyond the people who are like us, and beyond the people that we like. The first century doctor and historian Luke, who thoroughly investigated everything about Jesus' life, including interviewing eyewitnesses and gathering documents and all of that, spending time with people who spent time with Jesus and writing down their accounts, he records the story that Jesus tells. And it is in this story that the term Good Samaritan was coined from. So here's the story that Jesus tells. He says, a Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. In the story that Jesus tells, if someone doesn't get involved, if someone doesn't intervene in this man's story, he will be dead by nightfall. It's a Jewish man, which is important in the context of the story. He's just going about the normal of his day, traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. He was attacked by bandits. And obviously, in the normal of his day, which was disrupted by a world that's been broken by sin, there's a need. And the need is, if someone doesn't intervene, he's been beaten and robbed and is left for dead. And if someone doesn't intervene, if someone doesn't identify and meet the need, this man will be dead by nightfall. Sometimes our neighbor is the person in need. It may be a person we know. It may be a person we're connected with relationally. But sometimes our neighbor is the person that we just happen to come by, that has a need. And we may be involved in their life for just a moment, in a moment of need. And here's the tension that is easy to experience in this. There are needs all around us. There are people sitting next to you today. There are people sitting around you today. There are people watching online today whose world is full of needs. In fact, our world is so full of needs that the needs of our world are overwhelming. And we cannot possibly meet all the needs. No one can meet all the needs of the world around us. And because there are so many needs around us, and we become overwhelmed by the needs around us, we tend to say, I can't do everything for everyone, so I will do nothing for anyone. But here's the deal. We may not be able to do everything for everyone, but we can do something for someone. We may not be able to do everything for everyone, but we can do something for someone. I may not be able to do everything for everyone, but I can do something for someone. And the more someones who do something for someone else, the more someone else's needs get met because someone did something. But when no one does anything, no one's needs get met. Sometimes the first step in meeting the need is to be aware enough to identify the need. The Jewish man in the story, on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho, is attacked by bandits, stripped naked, beaten, and left for dead. Clearly, that's a need. And not every need is of that magnitude. Not every need is that important. And sometimes there are needs that we should not meet. And sometimes there are needs that we cannot meet. But when it is in our ability to identify and meet a need, love your neighbor means love your neighbor. If someone does not get involved, if someone does not intervene in this man's story, he will be dead by nightfall. So Jesus continues the story. By chance, a priest came along. But when he saw the man lying there, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. By chance means that the priest is going about the normal of his day. He's traveling this same road for some reason. And in the normal of his day, which is the same normal of day that the man who was beaten and robbed and left for dead was going through, just the normal of his day, he comes across a need. He sees the man lying there. Now, a priest was someone in the Jewish religious system who served in the Jewish religious temple. A priest is someone who would make sacrifices in the temple on behalf of the people in relationship with God. A priest is someone who mediated the relationship between the Jewish people and God. But when he comes upon his fellow countrymen, lying on the road, beaten, robbed, and left for dead, he does not have time. And he just passes by. Maybe he was running late for his responsibilities at the temple. Maybe he was running late for the important God things that he had to do. Maybe he was distracted by the other needs that he was on his way to meet. And for many of us, there are always reasons why we can pass on by. There are always reasons why we can't pause the normal of our day to meet a need. But you would think, right? You would think that a Jewish priest seeing a Jewish man, maybe he was afraid if he stopped, the same bandits would jump out and rob him and beat him and leave him in the same condition as the man. But you would think that a Jewish priest seeing a Jewish man would stop and meet the need, right? And the Jewish priest isn't the only one who shows up on the scene. Jesus continues his story. Really, he continues his story. There we go. A temple assistant walked over and looked at him lying there. But he also passed by on the other side. A temple assistant was another individual, not at the level of a priest, but was another individual who had specific responsibilities in the Jewish temple. And I imagine this part of the story, you know, so the man's laying here, and the Jew priest walks all the way over here to steer clear. Maybe he thought the guy was already dead, and that if he touched him, he would be considered ceremonial unclean, and thus disqualified to serve in the temple until his time of purification was over. As if meeting a need makes us dirty. The temple assistant, at least, "Hey, you okay, buddy?" And then goes, you know, I mean, at least he went over and looked. I'm not exactly sure which is worse. You know, you come over and you give the guy some glimmer of hope that you're going to help him, and then you just walk away and pass by. But notice that it says he passed by on the other side. He walked away. And I wonder if Jesus starts his story with the Jewish priest and the Jewish temple assistant so that the expert in the religious law who had challenged Jesus' love your neighbor comment would be upset with the priest and the Jewish temple assistant for not stopping and helping a Jewish man. I wonder if he would be indignant. If Jesus is starting the story with them so that the man would be indignant and say, "How dare they not stop and help? How dare they just pass by on the other side? This is a Jewish man, and by all accounts, they should stop and help." Or I wonder if maybe Jesus started the story with the priest and the temple assistant so the expert in the religious law would see himself in the priest and the Jewish temple assistant. And I wonder, maybe, if sometimes people like me and people like you can't see ourselves in the priest and the temple assistant. The priest and the temple assistant aren't the only ones who show up on the scene. Jesus continues his story and says, "Then a despised Samaritan came along. And when he saw the man, he felt compassion for him." The relationship between the Jewish people and the people of Samaria, despised is really the best word to describe it. And it had been that way for centuries. Culturally, a Samaritan represented everything that was wrong with the world for the Jewish people, and a Jewish person represented everything that was wrong with the world for the Samaritan people, and they literally despised each other. The Jewish people were, long before this story, conquered by the Assyrian people. The nation of Israel was divided into two kingdoms, a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom at the time. And the foreign king made Samaria the capital of one kingdom and Jerusalem the capital of the other kingdom. And so then tensions would rise as the result of the two different capitals. And then a temple was built in the capital of Samaria that brought in foreign gods and allowed idolatry into the temple. And so tensions escalated. And then the Jewish people and the Samaritan people in that part of the kingdom began to intermarry. And so Samaritans became known as people who were part Assyrian and part Jewish, and they were despised and they were hated by the Jewish people, and the feelings were mutual. And so a despised Samaritan comes upon the man. And when he saw him, he felt compassion for him. Compassion is not, these two neighboring countries would not have felt compassion for one another. The Jewish man laying on the side of the road, to the Samaritan individual likely had gotten what he deserved. And the world would be a better place if I just passed on by and left him for dead and let him die. That's how much they hated each other. But in the story that Jesus tells, a despised Samaritan. And isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting? How in the story that Jesus says it's a despised Samaritan, but how many of us know the story as the despised Samaritan? We don't know the story as the despised Samaritan. We know the story as the story of the good Samaritan. And why do we know the story as the story of the good Samaritan? Because when he passed by, he felt compassion for the man. And his compassion led him to action. And his compassion led him to meet the need of the someone he was supposed to despise. Someone he was supposed to hate. Someone who didn't think like him. Someone who didn't look like him. Someone who didn't believe like him. And the point that Jesus is making is sometimes the neighbor is someone in need. Sometimes it's someone you know, but sometimes it's someone who doesn't look like you, who doesn't act like you, who doesn't think like you, that doesn't believe like you. But you feel compassion for them. And Jesus goes on, going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. The Samaritan couldn't provide everything that was needed to heal all that was wrong. But the Samaritan had enough to soothe what was wrong. And was willing to utilize what he had at hand, olive oil, wine, and bandages, to soothe the wounds of a man. So Jesus goes on with his story. The next day, he handed the innkeeper 2 silver coins, telling him, "Take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you the next time that I'm here." So the man, the Samaritan, transports the Jewish man from the roadside to an inn. The story tells us that he used his own donkey to do so. And so the Samaritan man is willing to give up and leverage his mode of transportation for the man in need. And I don't know what this looks like, you know. I don't know if the Jewish man was in such bad shape that the Samaritan had to pick him up and kind of lay him over the donkey and ride that way, or if he had the guy could sit up, or if the Samaritan had to put the man on the donkey and then climb up and hold him in place so that he didn't fall off, and they had to ride together, or if the Samaritan had to lay the guy over and then walk the rest of the way. And I don't know exactly how comfortable. Anybody in here ever rode a donkey? How comfortable are they? Are they all that comfortable? No. But no matter how comfortable or uncomfortable the donkey was, the Samaritan man gave up the resource he had that made his trip more convenient and more comfortable, and was willing to walk or ride along and hold the person in need. And not only that, but he was willing to go to the innkeeper. And again, this may be reading into the story because Jesus doesn't tell us, but it says the next day. And I wonder if the Samaritan guy had somewhere else he needed to be that evening, if he had a business appointment with Google or Apple or one of those places, you know, the greatest, biggest contract in the history of the world. I'm about to land this contract. And then I come across this guy. And I wonder if it delayed his trip. I wonder if he planned to stay overnight in the inn anyway, or if he stayed in the inn overnight to meet the need of the individual who had a need. I don't know. I wonder. I like to think that maybe he stayed overnight because the guy needed him to take care of him. And so the next day he goes to the innkeeper and says, take care of this man. Do whatever you have to do. Here's some money. And if the bill is more than this, I will pay for it. I will pay you. And apparently, I mean, the next time I'm here, I would suspect, again, reading into the story, that the innkeeper knew this guy. And that he knew he'd be back. And that he knew that the despised Samaritan was someone who, if he promised to pay, he would pay. The next time, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. And Jesus then goes on in the story with just an amazing question for the expert in the Jewish. I imagine in this moment, I imagine when Jesus got to this point in the story and he said, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. I bet everybody in the crowd was just dead silent. I think maybe the only noise you heard was somebody going, ah. Because the story was so controversial. And then Jesus breaks the silence and turns to the expert in the Jewish religious law who wanted to justify his actions and challenge Jesus on love your neighbor. And said, now, which of these three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? And I imagine everybody gathered in the crowd went, and all eyes were fixed on the expert in the Jewish religious law. And I think all eyes were fixed on the Jewish religious law to see how he would answer. Because everybody there knew the answer. And we know the answer, right? We know the answer. And so the expert in the Jewish religious law left. No, I made that part of the story up. The expert in the Jewish religious law answers the question. The one who showed him mercy. The one who showed him mercy. So why? Why would the despised Samaritan do this? Why would the despised Samaritan stop and meet the needs of someone he hated? Maybe the despised Samaritan would stop and do this because when he saw the man beaten and bloodied and left for dead on the side of the road, he saw not a Jewish person, but maybe he saw a person who had value. Maybe he saw someone who was just had value because they were another human being that was in need. And maybe in some way, shape, or form, he saw them as someone who had value to God. Even if they didn't worship the same God, he saw someone as value to God. And sometimes it's easy for us to lose sight of the value that we have to God. And sometimes it's easy to lose sight of the value that others have before God because they're not like us. They don't think like us. They don't act like us. They don't behave like us. They don't believe like us. And we don't want to like them. And we don't want to love them. Maybe the Samaritan saw this person as someone. Because everyone is someone. And every someone has value to God. We often know how much value something has by the cost we are willing to associate with it, by what we are willing to pay for it, by what we are willing to give up for it. And every someone is someone who has so much value to God that he was willing to pay the price of his son. To redeem sin and to restore what was broken in relationship and what was wrong with the world. because everyone is someone, and everyone is someone who has immense, enormous value to God, and God desires relationship with each and every someone. And sometimes all it takes for someone to get connected to God is for someone to do something for someone. But as long as no one does anything, nothing ever changes. The phrase Good Samaritan is coined for us as the result of this story. And Jesus affirms the answer. Jesus tells the expert in the religious law that he is right, that it is the person who shows him mercy. But he doesn't just tell him he's right. Here's what Jesus says to him. Now, go and do the same. Your answer is right. Now go do that. Now go and do the same. Just go love your neighbor. And the expert and the religious leader, or the expert in the Jewish religious law, looked back at Jesus and said, "Can you tell me who my neighbor is again?" Now, I made that part up too. But isn't that sometimes what we do? Jesus says, "Yes, now go and do the same." And we say, "But who do I have to do that for again? Can you remind me again?" The term Good Samaritan wasn't coined for the hero in Jesus' story. It's coined for people who identify a need and feel compassion and are compelled to take action to make the lives of others better by leveraging the resources that we have for the good of those around us. The phrase Good Samaritan is coined for followers of Jesus who are willing to do what Jesus did and who are willing to do what Jesus said when he looked at the expert in the Jewish religious law and said, "Yes, now go and do the same." Love God. Love your neighbor. How much better a place would this world be? How much better a place would your life be? How much better a place would my life be? How much better would the world and the lives of those around us be if we just simply went and did the same? So, sometimes we close with three questions to keep and get the conversation going. We're not going to do that today. What we are going to do is we're going to close out with Jesus' words to the Jewish religious leader. Yes, now go and do the same.